Giant Penny, Episode 5, Adam West and Wonder Woman. Welcome to Giant Penny, Episode 5, I believe.
That's right.
With us today are James. Just say hello, James.
Hello, James.
James and son.
I'm not his son. No, okay. Son.
Jay, shall we call
hello.
You?
And not Hector. The son. That was Hector.
Hector, say hello.
Oh, hi. Hello.
Put the vapor down.
I can't. It's wonderful.
Boy, I didn't realize we recast Hector with Keanu Reeves.
Well, speaking of wonderful, somebody said the word wonderful. Speaking of wonder,
no one said it.
Somebody did. We want to talk a little bit about the Wonder Woman movie, but first we would like to commemorate one of the true champions of comic book geekery. One of the icons, shall we say?
A legend.
One of the legends.
I would say an icon. Definitely.
An iconic icon.
An iconic legend.
Biggest guy since, you know, George Reeve hung it up and Christopher Reeve picked it up, you know, between that period, he was probably the biggest.
He's so great. He's so great. We haven't even said his name and they know who we're talking about.
That's right.
It was in between Reeves and Reeve.
Who's going to say the name, the myth, the legend?
The man.
We are talking about Adam West. He has passed away 3 weeks ago.
I never thought he'd beat Shatner, but he did.
I didn't know he was sick.
Well, when you're 89, they don't really even have to announce it.
He was not 89. He was like, I don't know, 82, something
like
that.
He's 89, right?
No, I'm pretty sure he wasn't.
We already got a controversy going. Let's keep it up.
Date of birth.
He was great.
This is Raiders World.
1928. He was almost 89.
Okay. Okay, he was very, very...
To be fair, Hector doesn't know much about Batman, so...
We should let Hector go first. I think it is a close call between Hanzo and Hector as to who's the bigger Batman fan, but Hector wins it by a nose. Hector, why don't you tell us what Adam West meant to the myth of Batman and to you?
For me, personally, he was the first Batman I ever met. I mean, I think I must have been like 7 or 9, and I don't know. I watched the show on TV, and obviously I love it. All the kids love it. And then you grow up a little bit, and you met all these other Batman, the Dark Batman, the Grim Batman, and you stop liking Adam West for some strange reason. But then you grow up a little bit more, and then you rediscover Adam West, and you realize that he was basically the perfect Batman for a particular era of Batman. And you realize that the show was really good. I mean, it was, it had a lot of things going on that maybe I didn't understand as a kid. It had a lot of humor, and I don't know. I mean, I'm gonna really miss him.
He was the first human being a lot of us ever saw portraying a superhero, because I never saw George Reeves until later. So first person I ever saw that was a superhero.
For me, that was Christopher Reeve. My experience with Adam West was actually, I didn't see him till after Batman 1989.
Wow.
I lived in Korea for a lot of the childhood I can remember, so I didn't have a lot of the syndication that you guys did. So it was actually, we came back from Korea to San Angelo, Texas in 1989, and I discovered Adam West in the hotel that we were staying at while we were waiting for our base housing to work out. Yeah, I watched it every day.
Oh, that's his son.
I've always had a fascination with him there in the frame. Older eras, though. I've always liked Golden Age comics and Silver Age comics, and I always liked seeing like the earlier stuff. So I liked it instantly, but I didn't realize it was a comedy. I just thought people back then were kind of dumb, you know? So,
well,
you like cheesy things. Right?
And that's Adam West there you're holding in your arms, right?
Yeah, right. Adam West Hanson.
That's right.
Unless I originally wanted to name Mae West Hanson, but I got denied.
Yeah, I think Adam West, in retrospect, has turned out to be kind of one of the biggest ambassadors for all of kind of superhero culture. He was such a class act in terms of just embracing that role. He was perfect for it. He had the perfect voice, the perfect kind of larger than life persona. I watched the show as an 8-year-old, maybe even a 7-year-old. So it was in syndication. It's perfect for us for an 8-year-old, because as Hector realized or pointed out, there's these elements in it that you don't quite get when you're really young. Like all of the irony in the camp is lost on you. You're like, this is how TV should be. It should be this good. And the way the episodes were really about 20 minutes of content, that's perfect for the attention span of an 8-year-old. And then as you grow up, you're like, but these were actually, you know, well cast, well acted. They had A-listers as the villains. So it'll always be kind of the first thing I ever encountered that was about superheroes. Before I had even read a Batman comic, I saw Adam West. This is Batman.
So, what's kind of funny is that for as perfect as it was, you know, and it was a really kind of accurate adaptation of Batman comics at the time, was, I guess, the producer, William Dozier, read the material. It's like, you know, this is so, yeah, kind of contempt for it. You know, this is so idiotic. There's no other way to do this than other than as a comedy. And, you know, kind of do it with irony.
But when you're a kid, you don't realize that. You think it's all straight. You think it's the highest form of drama.
Right. Yeah, I think that's kind of what camp is, right? Isn't it like it's a comedy that doesn't pretend that it's, pretends it's not a comedy, right? Like Adam West would say those lines and he wouldn't like try to be funny doing it. He would portray them like a dramatic actor would.
Yes.
And that's why he was so great.
Right. That's what made it work. If he was Jim Carrey or something, it wouldn't have been very good. It would have been just a bad show.
That's why the Schumacher movies didn't work. I mean, it tried to have the same tone, but it failed.
You know, we talk about it like camp and as if it were comedy, but there's always an element and always has been with superheroes where part of the appeal for the reader and the creator is this sort of pro wrestling, this part of it where we all know this kind of is a thing that's not entirely realistic, and it would be fun to put on a costume, or it would at least be adventurous. And so really the first creators of that, I know you said he probably looked at it and said, I can't do anything with this, but there's something in that show that's like, no, I do like it. I like the whole idea, the aesthetic of costume superheroes and villains. And in a way it satirizes it, but in a way it kind of embraces the pro wrestling aspects of it.
Yeah.
Well, the
story about William Dozier I told was from, I think, the Batcave Companion, and they had a section about how he kind of was, what he was thinking when he developed the original, you know, the Batman TV show, which is funny because you look at something like, it was so successful and so good for its time, and then you look at something like the 2003 Daredevil movie, which was done with an extreme amount of reverence for the source material. The director, you know, snuck in all those references. He had Frank Miller in the movie, and it was horrible. Whereas, you know, something like that was a little more, you know, like Christopher Nolan's not a huge Batman fan or comic book fan, but he produced some of the best comic book movies. You know,
so the best.
Really, there's too many examples that illustrate there's no connection between liking something as a creator and actually getting it. You can even on a subconscious creative level connect with the material, or at least the potential that material has. And those things that we like the most, very few of us go, this has nothing to do with Batman, but I like it. It's usually like this, there's an aspect of this that it really was the Batman of his time. Now, if you look at the comics of those times, I mean, they kind of captured the spirit of it.
You know, what was also was kind of cool about the Adam West show, like from a non-comedic standpoint, was it was probably the most action-packed live-action superhero thing out there until the new superhero renaissance of post-year 2000. Like, every episode had, like, several fist fights. You know, they're leaping around, jumping around. Most TV shows, like, you know, the Hulk, it was like, what, like, seven, like 6 minutes of the Hulk every episode, or the Nicholas Hammond Spider-Man was like, you know, barely any spider action. You know, it's like you never really got to see him be a superhero for very long. It was almost like it was a little treat here and there in a 1-hour show. Whereas with Adam West, he was Batman for most of the show, and he drove the Batmobile. He flew the Batcopter. He drove in the Bat motor, what is it, the boat, whatever it is. And he fist fought all these.
The Batboat?
That's what's kind of cool about it, too. What's that?
The Batboat?
Yeah.
That's
some people call it that.
if that's what you want to call it.
He came up with a very simple naming system so you can remember the bat before what the thing is.
But that's what was cool about it, though, is that there was so much of superhero stuff in it compared to just about every other live-action superhero thing. I mean, even the Christopher Reeve Superman movies had like probably an undesirable amount of Superman to Clark Kent ratio compared to like Adam West, who was like felt like Batman at least 75% of the time.
Well, I just think, you know, in light of his passing, more importantly at this stage, he might be the first one of those sort of fandom roles where maybe there was a brief time where he was trying to get cast as something else, but for most of the last 40 years, he's been making appearances and proudly embracing it and being kind of an ambassador for the whole thing. So he's kind of one of the first of those sort of pop culture, comic book convention culture people, and he's to be commended. He's been a good sport and a good member of the hobby for most of the last half of his life, which is 89 years long, Hector.
I will always remember that from now on. And he looked younger. I mean, he looked like 60 or 65.
Yeah. Just Batman 89. It's a simple mnemonic device.
That's right.
Well, yeah, I would say that what William Shatner is the science fiction, Adam West is the superheroes.
Yeah, they both emerged in those iconic roles in the same television season, right? They're both 66.
Both lasted three seasons.
Yeah.
And they changed the world. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. They really did. They are some of the best men who ever lived.
Well, there are people that have
died for
other people that
might
be slightly better than a television actor, but
I mean, like, there's Alan Moore, who's better.
Right. Alan Moore.
Alan Moore was great in Green Lantern. I mean,
it's his Obi-Wan, Len Wein.
Right. Yeah. In case you guys are wondering, Duke's being quiet because he's a sworn enemy of Adam West. He was snubbed at a convention and he hates him.
Well, he's a sworn enemy of Batman.
He just thought comic books and superheroes were childish and he has no interest in them.
That's right.
I love George Clooney in the role so much.
Why do you hate Batman so much, Duke?
You know, he's part of the 1%. He's
That's reasonable.
Yeah, all those
rich ass
people like Joker and the Riddler just trying to get a leg up in the world, trying to get some free health.
He was a real hero. He would give all that wealth away immediately.
I mean,
instead of trying to do something with it,
you could donate it to Arkham Asylum, get some health care for those mental health care for those people.
I mean, the Joker, the Riddler, all those guys did need help, and he just kicked them in the face. I mean, wow.
Yeah,
if he was a hero, he would donate that money to a clown college.
No compassion.
You convince me that now I hate Batman.
I guess, like, you know, it's not, I think sometimes people can feel like he's so, it's like Wolverine syndrome, you know, a character so popular and he appears so often and he's so well liked that you kind of almost, like, unless you're of that mindset, you know, unless you like him too. Okay, well, you can.
He told him to shut up.
That's right.
All right, fair enough. Well, I'm going to actually have to call it a night, boys, so enjoy the rest of the call.
All right, Adam.
Adios.
Hanzo and Adam are out. I hope he comes back. I mean, I like that guy. What's his name? John something?
Yeah.
Which one, the kid?
No, the other one.
That I have no idea. Who
knows? Wow. Well, should we move on to Wonder Woman?
Wonder Woman.
Linda Carter didn't pass away too, did she?
No.
No.
Oh, thank goodness.
No.
Thank goodness.
She is 89, though.
She looks great. I can't remember, Jay, did you see it, the movie?
Oh yeah, opening night.
Opening night.
Oh yeah, that one looked like it was going to be good, and I was right. I called it, but then so did the whole world immediately, so I don't really get to have a secret, but I just thought they nailed it. I think there's probably 20 reasons why it worked. You really can't go, oh, they just did that and that's what all the other ones did wrong. But I think that they cast it perfectly, and they had a story where she wanted to be a hero. She embraced that role. She had heroic impulses from the time she was a four-year-old, and just being able to watch, I just think people were, you know, when she storms the battlefield that first time, I think people really identified with a character that wanted to be a hero more so than just because she was a woman. I don't think the movie was overtly political. I think it was a timeless heroic classic. And so I could say more, but I'd like to hear what you guys think.
I think that's what made all the difference, because she was always a hero, but she also chose to be a hero. That's what would make these characters great. So at some point in their lives, they choose. That's why I hated Man of Steel, because Clark Kent never really chooses anything there. I mean, all his decisions are made for him by his father or his adopted father or his worst enemy. you know,
circumstances dictate it, but people like a character that wants to be a hero.
Something I really like about the movie is that for ever since the beginning, other people told Diana, you can do this, you can do that. And at that point in the trench, I think Steve says to her, you can save these people. And that's where she just says, I mean, no, yeah, I can save them. And that's the hero moment of the movie. I mean, that's like when Superman goes and rescues the helicopter. And it's a great hero moment. And I was surprised because a lot of people reacted to that scene very emotional. I read many comments about how, oh, I cried during that scene. And I was surprised. I thought that I was the only one who cried in the hero moments.
Yeah, I got a few tears.
Did you?
Dabbed the corner a couple times.
I got a little misty-eyed. Yeah, I mean, you said it wasn't overtly political. That's how you put it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I thought that it was there if you were looking for it, but it wasn't. I mean, I think, not to step on your point, she's Wonder Woman, so being a woman is inherently part of kind of her story. I mean, she comes from this Amazonian fantasy island that's all women, so that's going to be part of it. But I thought that they didn't let that predominate. You know, she's a hero who's a woman, not just the woman hero.
Yeah. I like you said, it was there if you looked for it, and I guess, which is better than, or which is different from if it's not there at all. So I liked that it was in there, not bludgeoning you over the head, but that it was always kind of subtly informing everything.
Didn't it seem like there was a tone that she exuded that was like, the reason there's war in the world of humans is because of men. If there had been a woman at some of these key junctures, like when she's in the war room, say, you should be ashamed of yourself. It's almost like, that's how a woman would see the senselessness of war. And it's almost like it made a tie between there being this patriarchal, violent society in these wars, and that what the world needed was more equality between the sexes to sort of prevent that. Of course, then it lays the blame at the feet of Ares, I guess. But that was one element I saw.
Yeah, I think, and it's sort of there in the, and it's always been there, I guess, but it's sort of there in the language of it. That they you know, they refer to it as the world of man, you know, as opposed to humanity. They always, you know, the world of man, and you know, the trench that only she can. It's no man's land. You can't go out there. It's no man's land. You know, they kind of hit that just enough where you're kind of going, right? No man, but.
I mean, it's shown visually. You see Paradise Island. It's just so beautiful. It's golden and green and peaceful. And then you go to London, the Wall of Men, and it's dark and it's gray. It's dirty. It's ugly. I mean, I think that's one way to look at it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Some of the ways that it avoided the pitfall of seeming to be overly feminist or political or man bashing. With Steve Trevor is such a heroic character and such a good character, and he's right there beside her the whole movie. So you really couldn't say, oh, this makes it seem like, you know, men are worthless, because one of the most praiseworthy characters we've had in years was right there with her. So, and probably intentionally so, one of the key, most diabolical villains we've seen in years was a woman. So I think they intentionally did that so that people didn't get this idea that, you know, they're trying to make a political message. They're trying to tell a heroic story. There was a couple moments where they kind of let us off the hook and said, it's okay to have this sort of traditional view. I think the baby scene is the most notable, where she sees a baby and goes, oh, baby. You know, I think the hard left kind of came out against that and said we didn't like it. But that was a moment where it's like, yeah, oh, yeah, they criticized that. But, you know. That was a moment to say, it's okay, stereotypes. If you sort of have a couple of stereotypical views in your head, here's a little nugget for you. Women like babies, even one that's never seen one.
There's an article I read that it had a couple of interesting points. That it was a very balanced view, I guess, in the sense that it was finding a lot to praise and a lot to criticize. But one of the things that they pointed out that I hadn't really thought of it in these terms, but it's a nice moment, is where the Amazons during the initial, that first fight between the Amazons and the soldiers, they employ this kind of tactic that they've got, where one of them says shield, and they, you know, the part I'm talking about, and then they kind of hold up the shield, and then later Trevor and kind of uses that.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, the man learned something from the ladies. The other thing in the article, and I thought, I don't think I agree, but tell me what you guys think. They found fault in the fact that she and Steve Trevor went all the way, if you will.
Oh, they closed the door.
And I thought that was, this article was like, oh, I don't think Wonder Woman's the kind of person who would sleep with someone after knowing them so briefly. And I thought, are you slut-shaming Wonder Woman? I mean, what does that mean? She's not the kind of...
I think Wonder Woman would do whatever the hell she wanted.
Right, kind of.
I mean, I think they were kind of cryptic enough about the whole thing to where you just take away from it different things, because they kind of soft-pedaled that for the family audiences.
Maybe they just read a book that night, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way, if the movie were in 1945, it would have just been a kind of, maybe not quite as obvious, but a train
entering a tunnel.
Yeah, yeah.
What year was the movie set? Was it 1917?
Like 18, maybe 1918.
Okay, well, people didn't have sex back then.
Yeah. I do think it, you know, in all seriousness, even Steve Trevor, I mean, just things were much more traditional then. It was fairly out of time for that to happen, but they probably, I mean, we're in 2017, so no matter when it was set, that's a cinematic element that they kind of followed the mainstream with that one.
Yeah, but I guess the fact that you say that, like, you could argue that it actually was another feminist moment in a way. I mean, Trevor was the one who seemed kind of uncomfortable with the idea, even though he was attracted to her. You know what I mean? That right. That she was kind of the sexual aggressor, if you like, or the one who kind of said, "Hey, come over here."
Yeah.
So it was a feminist movie or wasn't?
I don't think it was. I think they skillfully avoided getting pigeonholed as feminist. That's what was so good about it.
Wait, do you think it was feminist sector?
I really don't know. I mean, I've been thinking about the question. I've discussed about that issue a lot. And I think the answer is a bit complex, because the relationship Wonder Woman has had with feminism over its 80-year history, or 70-something history, has always been complex. I mean, some feminists say that she's a feminist icon, and other feminists say that she is a big breast pinup girl. And, well, I think that's reflected in the movie. I mean, some see it as a feminist movie, others don't see anything feminist in it. And I think that's why the movie ended up being liked by pretty much everyone, because you could see things there if you were looking for it, or you could ignore it if you didn't want them.
Yeah. And I think that runs both ways. I think if you were looking for feminist elements, you could find them. But if you were looking for these sort of olive branches that were, and by feminist, I don't mean thinking highly of women. I mean a political left-wing kind of ideology about feminism. It was there if you look for it, but there was enough things running the other way to say, you know what, it was more like life. It kind of had a whole bundle of things.
Yeah,
I mean, there was not one single breakthrough in the movie where it commented on the sort of social position of women. There wasn't any, there was no heavy-handed statement about that. I mean, there was one little thing about the secretary who made some slave reference. What's her name? Like Fatty McFatty or something? I forgot.
Etta Candy was wonderful.
Candy. Yeah, I mean, she made something, but it was really more about being an employee. I mean, that was kind of like a snide remark, a semi-feminist, you know, slavery remark. But I'm like, well, isn't that true of any employee, no matter what the gender of the employee? So that's about as close as they got to a political statement of the times.
Yeah, I sort of feel like, because I guess I would say that it is a feminist movie, but I guess I mean that as a compliment. And Jay saying it's not a feminist movie means that as a compliment. So
right. So that's why that's why I think I have to be right, because if it were a feminist movie, I wouldn't like it.
That's why the movie's awesome.
Yeah.
Right. Because we're both answering.
Yeah.
In a complimentary way, even though we're giving the opposite answer. Yeah. It did kind of appeal to all audiences, and I do agree that. Yeah, it was more important, I think. I don't want to say more important, I guess, but it was the key feature was that it's just a really good superhero movie. Any gender politics aside, it's just really entertaining. I thought the screenplay was really solid. I thought the action sequences were the best. Well, I don't know the best, but among the best of any that I've seen.
Even more specifically, the choreographing of the fighting.
Yeah,
she's got the coolest fight style of any of the superheroes. I mean, she fights way cooler than Captain America.
I'm not sure I agree. That's the part I think I like the least. The fights, the Zack Snyder visual style.
Yeah, what style?
The Zack Snyder visual style. You know, the
so it sounds like you're saying sex.
Sex Snyder.
You look, well, I always look for sex everywhere, you know.
Yeah. Well, but okay, it did have a lot of slowdown in the cinematography, but her style, the way it involved a lot of sliding and changing direction, she didn't just kind of duke it out. She always used motion to fight. I've always wondered why, for example, the Jedi in the Star Wars franchise aren't kind of cooler in the way they move and look more powerful. They look kind of earthbound, and she looked supernatural in her ability to move.
Okay, I'll give you that. I think the style was great. I just didn't like the way it was shot.
Yeah.
Okay, I actually did. I guess I don't have the same dislike for that slow motion style. It's certainly been used in movies that I didn't like, but I prefer it because it actually looks, to me, it reminds me more of the experience of reading a comic, you know, to get those frozen moments where a hero looks really cool.
I think you're right. That's a good point. And, you know, the way I thought it was a bold choice that worked, the way the music, her theme, it does not sound transcendent and orchestral and classic. It sounded pulpy and like kind of like early 1900s pulp magazine fighting music. You know, it had a very, I don't even know, you're a music person, Jason, what you would call that little theme it goes into when she would fight, but it was different from the other superhero kind of John Williams type scores.
I haven't studied much of the pulp magazine music history.
Yeah, I just mean it sounded the way a pulp magazine would sound if they weren't silent books.
Okay.
It just had a very kind of a spy novel feel to it, the way the music sounded when it started.
Okay, I'd have to listen for it again.
Spy novels are also silent, by
it's,
the way.
It's the Hans Zimmer theme, right? The Zimmer theme from Batman v Superman.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of starting out to be, it's sort of sounding like the new DC cinematic theme, but it works so well, I now consider it like Wonder Woman's theme. It played about three times in the movies at key fight scenes. It would kick into that song. It was, I don't even know what instrument that was.
What instrument that was, dude? I mean, you know all about the musics.
I don't remember.
It's my ringtone. I mean, I have it here.
The Wonder Woman theme? The Wonder Woman theme is your ringtone?
Yeah. Well, it's not, but I have it here.
Okay. Is it the actual? It's not like a MIDI version. It's the actual.
It's the actual.
Okay.
Okay. Let me try. Okay, that's not it. Wait. Okay, now that's it.
Yeah. Okay, so now we know what instrument it was. It was a cello, I guess.
Is that a cello? Oh, it's a cello? Oh, yeah, okay.
What's that?
That's what I was talking about, that little.
Okay, yeah. It's great. Let's move on.
Okay.
Are we gonna because dude doesn't remember a thing about this movie, right?
He writes songs. He's our most musical one, and he's like, "I feel dead inside."
Yeah,
I remember nothing. So then I described it trying to use like what a book would sound like. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say, dude, but you let us down.
We might have to cut that whole section out for copyright reasons.
Yeah, just shorten it down.
It's okay. Don't worry.
Well, then just cut it out for
for shame purposes.
Yeah, because it doesn't shame me.
Because it's really embarrassing. Yeah.
Cut it out because it doesn't live up to the high standards of quality for the rest of this time.
Yeah. Did you guys think the final battle? Because a lot of times people talk about how the final battle is always kind of disappointing in superhero movies. The third act.
It was for me. It was the weakest part for me, spatially. Having a battle out on an airfield where there's just no story except just two people meeting like in a video game and throwing lightning bolts at each other, it was probably the weakest part. I think they probably overpowered her. I don't really like a Wonder Woman that is essentially more powerful than Galactus and is just shooting these bolts. It worked out nicely that they were on an airfield because of what happened with Steve Trevor, and there needed to be that simultaneity with what he's trying to deal with and what she's dealing with. But ultimately, the showdown with the bad guy, you know, it was kind of unsatisfying. I felt like they kind of wrote themselves into a corner with that. They needed a story where what he was up to was more meaningful in terms of what she needed to stop. But instead, he just tells her, "Hey, it's not me, it's them. I'm just here shooting lightning bolts." You know, that was kind of the showdown.
I liked how it finished Diana's arc in the movie. I mean, it was there for strong storytelling purposes, but I don't know. I didn't like the CGI. I didn't like all that stuff that was on the screen. It was generally disappointing.
Yeah. I thought it would have been, not to change the script, but I thought it would have been a nice point. And spoiler alert for those of you who hadn't seen it, Ares is the bad guy. I thought it would have been a nice twist to have Ares inhabiting an earthly form of a woman and then reveal himself and he looks like Ares. But the twist would have been, you know, he's doing things as what appears to be a human woman. Because you're expecting him to be from the world of men and, oh, he's one of these warmongering guys. It would have been cool.
I didn't like Ares, the actor in general. I like David Thewlis. I mean, he was great this last season on Fargo. But in the movie, I think it was lacking some, I don't know, strength.
Well, I saw it coming a mile away that it was him, and there was really no irony there. It was more like, here's the one character that's in the movie that could be Ares, and yes, it was him. Because you know it's not going to be the main guy. It's like, okay, it's him.
Ludendorff, no.
Yeah, I mean, that was who it was not going to be. And then, okay, who else? And there was really no irony in terms of, oh, I can't believe the guy that was doing this was Ares. It was more like, I can't believe that guy that visited him at the bar was Ares. I mean, that was all it was.
Why was that even a mystery? I mean, why was that even a twist? It was obvious from the start.
Yeah, there was no need to keep it secret. A little bit of weak writing there, but it was a terrible movie. I've changed my mind.
Especially the music.
That's right. The music, the, by the way, it hit you over the head with its feminism.
The music was just forgettable. I mean, it kind of reminded me of all pulp stories from the, I don't know. From
it sounded like the pages of a magazine flapping.
That's actually what the instrument was. They just rolled up a magazine and blew through it like a didgeridoo.
Right. We should do a podcast format where the first half of it, we praise something, and then we just rip it for 30 minutes.
And make fun of the way we actually praised it ourselves.
Well, is it a great irony to me that the woman who is the great casting, is it Gal Gadot? It sounds like a sidekick of Wonder Woman. Her name is Gal, and she's cast as Wonder Woman. Like, yeah, and it sounds like something from superhero comics. I'm Gal Gadot.
Yeah, and it's alliterative.
Yeah, it's alliterative like most superhero or character names in comics, and it starts with Gal.
Yeah, yeah, you could just be like, Gal Good.
Yeah.
That was great casting. I mean, I think it was Christopher Reeve and the great...
Yeah, This one follows the rule that most of the really game-changing superhero movies, Iron Man comes to mind, have a part of it is they just totally nailed it by getting a great cast. Iron Man would be one of those.
Well, I think Robert Downey Jr. made Iron Man better.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think if you change that one thing, with the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe might have gone differently. Because as you know, I'm not a Chris Evans fan. He's like the Emperor, so he's not wearing clothes.
Come on. He's also, why do you hate Chris Evans so much? Yay. I mean, really?
I know. He's got no chops. He's got no gravitas as Steve Rogers. And people are just seeing Robert Downey Jr. Like when they see it at the screen, they think, well, maybe Robert Downey Jr. is about to be in this scene. I guess I'm liking it. But I know I'm in the minority there, but I think history will prove me right. He is no Robert Downey Jr.
100 years from now.
1,000 years from now.
That's right.
They're talking about the soundtrack sounds like a Kindle.
That's right. And the music sounds like the books of our day.
So who do we think? Yeah, so Robert Downey Jr., Christopher Reeve, Gal.
Chris Evans. It's obviously Chris Evans. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no. I think she's up there with Robert Downey Jr. I don't think there's another casting that is good. And Christopher Reeves. I think Reeve. That's kind of the big three.
Yeah, don't put the S at the end of Reeves. Don't be that guy.
That's George Reeves. That's the other Superman, the lame one.
I totally know that. I did not slip and say Reeves.
No.
I'm that guy that corrects you. You don't correct me. I correct you. Did I slip and say Reeves? Is that what you're telling me?
That's exactly what I'm telling you.
I think history will show that you did.
That makes my heart break.
That's going to be my new ringtone.
Yeah. Please delete it. I'm one of those, I don't think I've ever even seen Doctor Who, and I make a point of not calling him a Doctor Who. I call him the Doctor.
Oh, that's nice.
It wasn't too long ago I was having a lunchtime conversation and I said, and someone was mentioning, I don't know how it came up, and I said, you know, actually it's the Doctor. It's sort of a play on words or a kind of an in joke for the title. And they go, really? So you watch that? And I'm like, no, I've never seen it.
No,
they looked at me like, what in the world do you care for then?
You just know stuff.
I like the idea of knowing that more than the idea of sitting through a Doctor Who episode.
But they are awesome. You should see them. All of them. All 200 episodes of Doctor Who.
I probably should.
Oh, 35 seasons. How many seasons are there?
Like 36, I think.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
It went from like 65 to 96 and then interrupted, and there's been like 12 seasons or something since.
63 to 89.
Okay.
And then from 2005 till this day.
But you've never seen it.
I don't know if I trust you, Hector. I mean, you didn't know how long the rest was.
I know. I'm trying to redeem myself. Come on. Okay. All right. Give me some help here.
All right. I need to like prove I know about music. Somebody asked me about key signatures or something.
No, I'm sorry, but you failed.
I'm drawing a total blank about the music, fellas.
I really am. I don't remember.
Music. What are the Beatles?
Anything else that we like that we kind of haven't kind of touched on? I think the changes they made to the origin, I think they might have changed it if they had not. You know, World War II was the war in the comics, and I feel like they were trying to somehow deftly sidestep having to get into a political thing about America and the Nazis. And World War I is just the forgotten war, so it could be this blank canvas to have a more abstract statement about war instead of World War II, where everyone very much sees it as a justified war. I don't think it would have resonated as much to be like, why are you fighting? You know, that kind of thing, because World War II, immediately people think that was very clear why we were fighting. World War I, kind of a deft touch to do that.
I think they were just trying to sidestep a comparison to Captain America. I mean, yeah. They failed. They still, Steve died in the end, sacrificing himself, but
yeah. But see, Captain America wasn't really, you're right. I mean, that sidestepped it in a way and didn't in another way. But Captain America was about embracing war, at least Steve Rogers. I mean, he wanted to serve. There's not a lot of questioning of what is this all about? And whereas they wanted to do something with this one where she's made to seem like the whole idea of fighting is senseless and stupid. And that just doesn't fit with a World War II movie. World War II is about fighting when it's not senseless. You know, it's about opposing the Third Reich, at least to most people. So I think a lot of people are missing that was a pretty deft touch to switch that up that way.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it in those terms. But
I mean, wouldn't you have been thinking, if you know Hitler's in the movie and you know the Third Reich's about to take over the planet, wouldn't you have been thinking, quit twiddling your thumbs, you know, this, you know, everyone's fighting for the fate of the world, you know.
Just punch Hitler already.
Yeah, punch Hitler like Captain America did. But in the first one, you're seeing it's more like, you guys don't understand, you're making a mess because this is going to lead to World War II. You know, it's more like an incipient wave of wars that we know will consume most of the 20th century. So it sort of paints a palette for her. I hope her future solo movies are period pieces at different times during the 20th century. I thought that part's great, seeing a period piece. Yeah, would that be the first period piece superhero movie we've had? I guess so. I guess so.
Really? Why do you hate America so much, Jay? Yes. I mean,
I guess really, you're right. First Class is a period piece. That's sort of quasi-timeless.
Yeah, but that was boring.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. No. Come on.
No, I mean it's the best X-Men movie not directed by Bryan Singer.
Yes,
it's not directed by Bryan Singer, and it's the best X-Men movie.
Yeah.
No, that second part is wrong, but the first part was right. When Jay said something about the origin, I thought you were talking about the origin of Diana, that she is, I think, Zeus' well, that god's daughter. I didn't like that. I prefer the classic origin, that she was made from clay.
Yeah, and I like the way, I don't know how much of what I know is the origin. Most of what I know of the origin was from both Super Friends and the TV show. But I really liked the way they had the contest for who will return Steve Trevor. And she puts on a mask and she wins the contest. And Queen Hippolyta learns she's been training secretly. I thought that was good. I don't know why they took that part out.
That was classic Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
I mean that's straight from the comics.
Yeah, they still had her secretly training, and they still had Queen Hippolyta like getting surprised and going, "Oh, my own daughter training!" You know, they still tried to do it, but then it was like, "Okay, let's go back with our lives." Hey, wait, now there's guys. I mean, they could have combined those elements.
I think the reason there is that Geoff Johns doesn't like that origin, and he wants to change. I mean, come on, Geoff Johns is a monster.
Yeah. And the other thing that occurred to me about that is it's sort of the Clark Kent and glasses problem. Modern audiences apparently are thought not to accept that anyone could see her in a mask and not immediately know there's like 19 of us on this island. That's Diana, you know.
But so few people, like, who did they think that was?
Yeah, but I feel like they could have pulled it off by having her somehow magically obscured, introduce some device or gimmickry to obscure her face and have her win.
Well, Linda Carter had like a blonde wig in the pilot.
Yeah, she put on a wig, although still, like, there's 19 of us, that's her, but yeah.
I think the issue there is that the secret identities are not really needed in these modern superhero movies. I mean, you still got Spider-Man and that, but the other Marvel heroes and these heroes, I don't think they really respect that tradition or hold on to it.
So do we need to go back and... Hector and I were both laughing.
Yes.
Hector and I were both laughing at you said there was no period superhero movies. Is that do you hate Chris Evans' performance that much that you just don't consider Captain America a period movie?
I guess it was. You're right. I forgot about that one.
It's okay. It's like how I consider this movie, Wonder Woman, the first DC Universe movie. It's okay. It's the first one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so you're just ignoring the existence.
The reason I overlook Captain America is his origin is inextricably bound to me. He is the man out of time. He's the World War II soldier, and so they had to tell that story. But with Wonder Woman, it was a choice. You know, they could have told a modern version, and they instead chose a period, and they chose a different one from the comics. So it's not like they were being that loyal to it. They realized. We kind of like the idea that she's this timeless warrior. And where I was going with that is the reason I hope some of her other movies are period pieces is because they've created that possibility precisely because they set her, they did it as a flashback story. She's somehow been at work in human affairs through the entire 20th century, yet the world did not know of her existence. Like when she shows up in Batman v Superman, everyone's not going, well, of course, that's Wonder Woman. She has adventures. So we could have some secret adventures of Wonder Woman movies, which would probably be a better way to do it, because then we'd see her in Justice League movies would be her current day implementation. And if we want to see a solo Wonder Woman, it could be set, you know, in the 70s, you know.
Linda Carter times.
Linda Carter, they could do the sort of karate Wonder Woman of 1968.
You know. How's that going to work? I mean, did everyone who saw Diana at World War I forgot she saw her? I mean, because in Batman v Superman, she's unknown to the public. The Batman and Batman knows stuff. He's like, yay.
I know. I think she disappears and is sort of this secretive figure that shows up very rarely, and people get smoked by her lightning bolts, and everyone dies. And so, you know.
She leaves no witnesses.
She circles back and finishes them off like Superman of the 40s.
She's got like an urban legend quality.
That's right.
Like Batman.
Miscalculated.
She dresses up like a bat. Hector, I think we've had this conversation before, that you don't like period superhero movies.
I don't. For the most part, I mean, I like the good ones, like Captain America and Wonder Woman. But...
So he likes all the ones that have been. But... First class.
I dislike the idea of period pieces. I think they made superheroes feel old, and I don't like old superheroes. I like superheroes to be young and vibrant and new.
See, I like period movies, period. In other words, I think when you go to the cinema, it's like extra for your money to say, they're going to use the tools of cinema to create what the world looked like in a different year. I just independently enjoy that aesthetically. It's a pleasing experience to be dropped into a world that looks familiar yet older. So they don't all have to be period pieces, but it's like an extra bang for your buck to get to see that world. Because I think we accept a little bit of them not being, movies today are kind of trapped in a very fast cut, hip editing style that you just kind of have to do it for a modern audience. But if you do a period piece, they kind of like calm, disarm, and say, all right, let me experience the movie that they've made. And it doesn't have to be so fashionable in the way it's edited and cut.
I agree. I love period pieces. I don't like them about superheroes other than Captain America and Wonder Woman.
The two that there have been, right. Except for First Class.
All yeah, right. But I all forgot about that one.
Yeah, I'm glad we did this because I got to tell you, I was disappointed by Logan. I didn't see it at the movies, and after I saw Wonder Woman, I said,
"Don't spoil it for me."
I'm not going to spoil it, but
oh, come on, just spoil it.
Well, it's not any particular thing. I was just kind of sitting there checking my watch a little bit. I was like, wow, I expected to be blown away after Wonder Woman. I said, now I'm back on the hobby horse again. And I watched it. I was kind of like, okay.
I liked Logan, but I didn't like it as much as other people did. I mean, yeah, not, some say that it's the best superhero movie ever and all that. And I mean, it's good. It's a... really depressing. I don't like my superhero movie to be depressing. I prefer the future of Days of Future Past, you know, that wonderful, beautiful future. Yeah. Not the Logan future. I mean, that's just awful.
I think people were just responding to seeing a superhero movie with sort of a dystopian vibe, and it sort of has a very, you know, Johnny Cash kind of feel. I think that music that they played was sort of emblematic. I think if they paid too close attention, there's not much of a story or a transformative arc there. I didn't much care for it. Enjoy it, though, dude.
I shall.
Did you love it, dude?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh.
I'm still basking in the glow of First Class from 20 years ago. That was just so good. I don't want to ruin it.
I like Logan, and I like Guardians of the Galaxy 2. But my favorite series have been Wonder Woman and the Lego Batman movie. That movie is wonderful.
Mine's King Kong. Setting a King Kong movie in 1973 with Vietnam soldiers fighting him was just too much. I completely just flipped out.
Yeah, that was a period piece. I didn't like it.
I loved it. Yes. It's like they sat there and tried to make a movie. Let's make a movie that Jay cannot resist. It will have soldiers. It will have Vietnam helicopters. It even had the music of that era, which was the best. It was the 70s. And King Kong. It's perfect. I hope for the best for the giant monster cinematic universe because they've got it in good shape. It's good.
I think Wonder Woman is the only movie I've seen this year, so I guess I have to rank it as my favorite.
That's an easy ranking.
Yeah. Of the ones that were released, I've seen it in King Kong, and maybe it was Rogue One. That was Christmas. I saw Rogue One.
Yeah, that's last year. No, I mean, I've seen a lot of movies. Most of them have been terrible, like Pirates 5 and The Mummy. I mean, The Mummy was horrible, and not in a good way.
Yeah, I could tell it wasn't going to be good.
Tom Cruise really disappointed me. Yeah. It's been twice.
Yeah, we were just talking recently about how much we like him. He usually doesn't disappoint.
He disappointed me with Jack Reacher 2. That also was horrible.
Yeah, that was not as good as the first one, but I did enjoy it in just kind of a, like I was watching an episode of Rockford Files or something, just kind of almost in a TV way, but it was not as good. He's in a slump. Tom Cruise is in a slump.
I know. I mean,
it had to end after 35 years at the top
of greatness and classics.
Yeah.
How can he fail? How did Xenu fail? Yeah.
Well, maybe it was foretold. I don't know. But seriously, you'll never see another Hollywood A-lister hold the top spot for as long. I mean, he succeeded the John Wayne standard.
I think maybe Chris Evans can do it.
If anyone can do it, it's Chris Evans.
It's Chris Evans. I mean,
we hopefully cast him in some other movie. But
that guy is great. I hope he never stops playing Captain America.
Yes, yes, he's right up there with Robert Downey Jr. He's a giant of cinema. You notice he's not headlining anything else. He's not even in Chris Hemsworth's class as far as the roles he's getting. He's a lightweight.
I like him as what's his face? Johnny Storm.
No, I don't like him, period. I like him as like that hilarious guy in some of those teen movies where he's a spoof of himself, but that's about it. I think Chris Hemsworth would have been a better Captain America.
No, that.
Oh, he was perfect. The way
he was perfect. He's perfect for Thor. He's like this dumb but likable guy.
He's a little more Steve Rogers. You see the way he played Kirk's dad in the first J.J. Abrams Star Wars movie? His demeanor and look in that movie was perfect for Steve Rogers.
I think he was channeling Chris Evans in that movie. obviously.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah.
I mean, the first Star Wars movie, I don't remember him in it.
The first Star Trek, excuse me. The first Star Trek, the one with Chris Pine as Kirk, and when he's in the beginning of the movie, I know, his smoke man. Was Chris Hemsworth.
I just wanted to correct you. I knew what you meant.
You know, I'm on a roll between Christopher Reeves and Star Wars. what I call the Etta Candy. You know, I'm just not good.
Etta Candy as Fatty McFatterson.
Yeah.
It's amazing to believe you're not a feminist, Jay.
Well, they named her something that sounded like Fatty Candy or something. I couldn't remember what it was, but they're trying for that.
I do like that scene at the beginning of Star Trek. I think he would have been a good Captain America. For that matter, Chris Pine would have been a good.
He would have. He has that same gravitas that I feel like Chris Evans is missing.
Chris Pine should have been a great Hal Jordan.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. They got Hal Jordan wrong. They
really, really horrible wrong.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he's the one guy that's supposed to be that Chris Pine, fighter pilot, takes it seriously, deserves the ring, has no qualms about his role as a hero. He's the one hero in the DC universe that deserves the power, that came by the power he has because he was chosen as worthy. And they take that potential and give it to what's his name? Chris
Deadpool. Deadpool.
Deadpool guy. I mean, born to play Deadpool. I don't know,
Chris. He was great in Deadpool, but
it's R. What is it? Robert Ryan? Ryan?
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds. That's right.
Did you see Deadpool, dude?
No.
Damn. Why do you love the X-Men?
I know, but First Class is all I need. It's so good. It's okay. The need for any other ones.
It's okay. I mean, it's like the 7 or 8 best X-Men movie.
I don't like Deadpool, though. I mean, that's a Rob Liefeld character. I'm not really into him.
Yeah, but then other writers made it good, actually. Really? Trust me, I know about the X-Men that you hate.
You're sort of to the X-Men when I'm in Batman.
you should watch Mad Men. I've been trying to get you to watch it. Here's the hook. It's got January Jones in it, who plays, what's her name? The
Emma Frost.
Don't watch Mad Men.
Not unless you want to watch the greatest show of all time. Watch it.
I mean, if you want to watch that, you can watch Doctor Who.
I thought you were going to say Breaking Bad. Isn't that your favorite?
Yeah, I was going to say Breaking Bad, but then I remember that I love Doctor Who a lot these days, so I say Doctor Who.
You're just in a Doctor Who...
Yeah. I mean, Doctor Who is awesome.
Are you really on a Doctor Who kick? I didn't know.
Yeah.
All right.
Did they just come out with a new season? Like, what's got you currently so a Twitter about?
There's going to be a new Doctor. And Doctor Who is one of the greatest superheroes ever. I mean, it's not really a sci-fi or fantasy show. It's a superhero show. I mean, he has all the things a superhero should have. I think both of you would like it.
I want to get into it. I'll probably start with the David Tennant season. That's probably a good entry point. You did say Doctor Who is one of the great superheroes. Really, in that sentence, you should say the Doctor. You know, it's referring to the person.
Not, yeah, some fan.
Yeah.
Fake fan.
He wears glasses and then he goes into a phone booth and he comes out as Doctor Who. Is that
That's exactly
that's the premise? Yeah. Okay.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. He opens his shirt and there's a big W on his chest.
Sorry. Just a D.
You guys know I still slip and say Frankenstein, and then I'll correct myself and go, I should say the monster. It bothers me, but I still do it. I'll go, oh, he looks like Frankenstein.
But did you see, I was going to say maybe Hector, you're the one who posted this, but somebody kind of said, well, what else would you call him? His dad's name? Like, it's Frankenstein. He has no other name.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay to call him Frankenstein.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that be his name? He'd be named after the guy who created him.
Yeah. I'm really not sure why they named the movie or the book Dad. I mean, it's the movie was called Frankenstein. It's terrible. It doesn't reveal. I mean, it's not. That guy didn't deserve to have a new movie. It should have been called The Monster or Prometheus or whatever.
What was the book called?
I mean, Frankenstein.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying the movie bastardized it or something.
No, well, they had a chance to correct it. At least Frankenstein, the book was like 1820 or something.
Yeah, and written by a woman. So
a woman, so she probably didn't know what she was doing. And Adam West was just being born about that time.
And I think the original book had a subtitle, something like A Modern Prometheus or something like that.
It had a subtitle, that's right. That's why I'm saying they had a chance to correct it with the movie, because they go, you know, we want to appeal to, we want to say something about there being a monster in it. And instead they called it Frankenstein, and that's what caused it. It's the same kind of cute joke about Dr. Who being the name of the show. I think civilians, people that aren't following it, go, well, you know, forget it then, if it's that stupid that you've got this little in joke and his name's not Dr. Who. This is why people go crying and can't enter the hobby.
Yeah, it's why Frankenstein never really took off.
Is it? That's right. It holds him back. It holds him back. It could have been so huge.
I hope Tom Cruise fixes it in his Universal Monster shared universe.
Oh, boy. That's off to a bad start. Well, I just feel like Wonder Woman has infused. Everyone keeps predicting the demise of the superhero movie, and then along comes one that infuses it with new hope. And I think they're going to be here for another several years. It proves if you make a good movie, people still enjoy it. There's no reason for these to have an expiration date on them.
All three movies, superhero live action superhero movies this year have been really good. I don't think the genre is in trouble. The bubble is not about the burst anytime soon.
No.
Would Wonder Woman fall in your top 10, your top 5?
It's in my top 3.
Really?
For superhero movies, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say it's up there. It's hovering.
I tend to probably award extra points for one that starts a new thing. So for me, it's Iron Man, Wonder Woman. But actually, I take that back. I like The Dark Knight better than Batman Begins. So those would be my big three. Avengers is up there, the first Avengers. And after that, I think there's probably everything else is at least a tier below those. Sort of the first good team movie, the first good Iron Man movie, the first Wonder Woman movie. And I guess for Batman, it really didn't click for me at Batman Begins. It's got to be Dark Knight.
I go to the Batman movies, the Captain America movies, Avengers, and then Wonder Woman.
Right. Are you talking about the Captain America movies with Chris Evans? Because give me a break.
Yeah, that's what those movies are awesome. I mean, Winter Soldier, Civil War.
They were okay as movies, but they're missing out. Captain America is not awesome enough. He's kind of like a MC that hosts other characters that are awesome. He himself is just not awesome, and he should be. He really should be the most awesome character in that universe, above Tony Stark.
And he's when he's played by Chris Evans.
Yeah, he is not. He's getting his lunch eaten by Robert Downey Jr. He's not up to it.
He's getting his lunch served personally by Robert Downey Jr. as his butler.
I don't think so.
As his butler.
Yeah.
All right. So my top 5, X-Men First Class, of course.
Of course. And also 2 through 5.
Which one is that?
It's the good one. It's the one you think of when you see the
X-Men. Days of Future Past. Okay, that's good. Yeah. I mean,
X-Men First Class, Days of Future Past, X-Men 2. Logan. Logan, I haven't seen yet, but I'm saving a spot in the top 5 for it.
Yeah. Do you want Wonder Woman in there?
Oh, no. I guess I asked the question without having my own answer, but yeah. I was curious what you guys thought. I mean, somebody on Facebook was talking about specifically origin movies as a kind of a subgenre of superhero movies. Yeah. Certainly Wonder Woman would make that list. I think for me, it was one of the best sort of creation of a hero, or, you know, like the formation of a hero story, you know?
Yeah, we knew what origin meant also, but yeah. If only for the word for like the creation or formation of a hero.
Jay, why don't you tell us why Hal Jordan is so great? I've never heard of
him. Yeah, well, you know,
we're gonna need
to the first time today I've told that story. I've stopped people on the street and tell them about Hal Jordan.
We're gonna need a whole new podcast for that.
Yeah, that's true. For the layperson who doesn't know what origin means, I just wanted to make it clear.
Understood. Kind of like how I used pulp magazines to describe music. It helps. Yes.
So Hal Jordan is like a steak.
Yes. He's like a steak with a book laying on it. Silently.
And he sort of he's a screw up, but then he gets the ring, and then
no, he's not the greatest American hero. He's awesome from the beginning.
And it's kind of a, it's a sort of feminist story. It's Hal's girlfriend who really saves the day. Yeah,
he's got a lot to learn. His views are backwards. He gets lectured by people in slums.
Yeah. He checks his privilege.
Yeah, he checks his privilege. He's like, you're right, I'm not worthy. That's the ultimate lesson here. And he lays down the ring. There you go.
But yeah. Well, I guess I was just thinking of me. Well, I guess we don't need to get into the semantics of it. I'm sorry. Superhero origin movie. We all
know right, are you guys going to see Homecoming? Spider-Man Homecoming. We ought to have another podcast about that. I can already tell it's going to be good.
I know it's going to be good.
I thought the consensus on this one was not going to be good.
No.
No, yeah. The consensus is that it was going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to have feminist overtones that are going to be awesome.
Oh, well, then I'm in. That changes everything.
Yeah. I mean, Spider-Man was introduced in Civil War, and that movie had Chris Evans. I mean, it needs to be awesome.
I guess between the Chris Evans Association and the...
Yeah, I mean...
Is it set in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis?
I think so.
Then it's going to suck if it ever happens.
That really is when it should be set, 1962. That's when he came out.
I would think so.
So... I don't know, the commercials didn't seem good, or the previews, they didn't seem good to me. But I guess
I think they've done a good job, you know, how so many times the previews tell the whole movie. I feel like I've seen the whole movie when I see it. But in this one, they keep throwing out bits and pieces to where you really aren't sure of the plot. But I feel like he's going to have this, you know, riding high with technology from Tony Stark. He's going to get it taken away. The Vulture, played by Michael Keaton. I love that line. He's like, I'll kill everybody you love. He's going to really take him down low. And he's going to have to find that hero within without the technology when no one believes in him. And he's going to totally transcend it. I can already kind of sense it, but they haven't really spelled it out. That's why
I'm already crying here.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I don't need to see the movie. You just gave away the whole plot.
But I don't know that for sure. But I feel that that's going to be it.
Well, okay. But if I see the movie and that's what it is, then you did spoil it.
Well, yeah. You want to hear about how that again?
Yes.
He made the movie better for you.
That's right.
Yes, that's true. That's what spoil means.
It's science. It's science.
So it is going to be good. All right, well, then I guess I'll go see it.
Yeah. I think it was a good move getting somebody really young looking as Peter Parker. It's better to do that than to start over and tell the origin again. The origin is when a superhero is formulated for people that don't know origin. But instead of telling it again, just cast somebody young and it'll have the feel of a movie where he's just getting started.
Even if the origin movies are always great. Or yes. Almost always great.
I just think people, I know you guys disagree with me on this, but Spider-Man is the one example of a franchise where they're telling it too often. I mean, it was too soon when they recast Andrew Garfield. And if they had done it this time and we see Uncle Ben die again, it would have been too much.
I agree with that.
And so, see, they dealt with that problem by saying, well, instead of a new origin movie, but we'll cast him young and it'll have the feel of a new start.
When you say origin movie...
Yeah, for those of you who don't know what origin means, it's like when a superhero starts.
Batman Begins, Superman the movie, X-Men, the first one.
First Class.
No, then
not first one. First
no, that's that's
that. I have to admit that first X-Men, it kind of gets graded on the curve for me because it was the first one where I said, okay, this is a new era. They can now do superhero movies. The special effects have arrived enough to where this could start something huge.
Yeah,
I appreciated that.
That's the granddaddy of them all. That's the one that started it. The modern superhero era.
But see, that to me is not an origin movie because...
It's Wolverine origin. No, it is. It's kind of Wolverine origin.
Because the team was already together? Is that what happened?
The X-Men already exist. And Wolverine just joins. So it's sort of like Batman 89, like in a way, I mean... He's just starting out, but the inciting moment happens in a flashback.
No,
I was being so pedantic about. See, it's the formation, the story of the formation. It can't just be like, oh, it's the first time we saw Michael Keaton as Batman, and he's kind of
not as good as Adam West, but he was okay.
When I said like the overuse of the origin movie, I would put X-Men as an example. You don't have to do here's the story of how they became the X-Men. to introduce the idea of them. So that I like them to do a, I mean, there's a place for the fully told origin movie, but I wish they would more often just go, this character already exists and we'll let you know what you need to know.
That's what sequels are for, Dave.
Well, like Batman 89 did a good job of it. That was a good example where we learned everything we needed to learn, but it wasn't just starting out, okay, he's a kid, okay, he's growing up, you know. I feel like those movies suffer a little bit from, you know, a pacing problem where half of them has to be about how they got their powers, then there has to be a satisfying story. The pace works better if they're already kind of going and we learn what we need to learn.
I think the best is you've got the movie with Xavier in a wheelchair, but then you go back and show.
I love that. How his legs are injured. After it's been introduced.
Yeah. So you go back to the 60s and you show how yes. his legs were injured. That's how you do it.
And when they give you a period piece, that's like the best of all worlds.
So I think even though you're just kind of, you're basically completely disagreeing with each other, right? The two of you?
Yeah. Hector hates period pieces and he loves origin movies. I love period pieces and I don't like pure origin movies for the most part. There's some good ones, but generally speaking, I like the ones that are not origin movies.
Yeah. Well, the period thing is a more specific thing, but I mean, origins are so, I mean, that's when the hero forms, guys.
That's what makes us care about the heroes. The origin, the choices, why do they become a hero?
It's fun to know. It's just a question of how to cinematically present it. I just think structurally, it's a better movie when you step into a world where the superhero exists and there's a bit of mystery about it. There's a bit of, why does this guy in a wheelchair have a school for mutants? And you encounter the character and learn about what his motivations are. And you don't have to see him built up brick by brick. It's just tough to tell a good movie. If it works, but too many times it's too much of a tall order to have a good movie that starts from the very beginning.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm not
like First Class. I agree with that example.
Yeah. I stayed away from that movie at the theater because it was doing, you know, I kind of like the idea that we're never quite sure how it all got started.
But then you saw it and you realized, oh, this is awesome.
And I realized I was wrong. And I said, so that's what an origin is. I've misunderstood it.
It's when you notice.
When they get formation, I got it.
People were just tossing this word origin out there, and I was like,
and I just argued with them. I argued with them to cover up the fact I didn't know what origin.
All right, so I guess we've gone a little far afield from Wonder Woman itself, but
yeah, but we haven't done one of these in months, so we'll get them tighter in the future.
All right, well, I think one of the future topics should be we really need to really solve this question. First of all, what origin means. Second of all,
I'm gonna look it up.
Is Jay or Hector right? We have to really decide with finality. Right. One of you has to be right, and one of you has to be wrong. So.
That's right.
But so I guess we can wrap up for this week.
Go see Wonder Woman.
It was great.
Good night, everyone.
The vapor down.
I can't. It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Boy,
it's wonderful.
I didn't realize we recast Hector with Keanu Reeves.
It's wonderful.
Well, speaking of wonderful,
it's wonderful.
Somebody said the word wonderful.
It's wonderful.
Speaking of wonder,
it's wonderful.
Somebody did.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful.